Hey, everybody. Welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their movies.
Woohoo!
I'm Hemel. This is Brian. And this season, we are tackling the works of Mr. Matthew McConaughey. If you have joined us for previous episodes, we've already done A Time to Kill. We've done The Wedding Planner. This week, we're doing...
Reign of Fire!
Brian says you have to say it like that for
the
whole...
Can you put like some reverb on my voice in post?
For the whole podcast.
Also, I have been asked by my co-host not to woo, but I feel like the wooing, like, it just creates this excitement and buzz, and people feel like they're part of the magic, so...
I have asked you to not woo excessively.
Fair enough, fair enough.
But yes, so this week we're talking about
Reign of Fire!
It's getting so annoying.
It really is, but there's nothing I can do about it. That's what the movie's called.
We're going to be talking about Reign of Fire, a 2002 movie directed by Rob Bowman, starring Matthew McConaughey, starring Christian Bale.
And dragons.
And dragons. Also Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler in a very, very minor role.
So, yeah, I feel like we have a lot to get into with this podcast.
Do we, though? It's a rather slight movie in so many ways.
Slight but incredible.
I had never seen Reign of Fire. I knew that it was Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey fighting dragons. And I was excited for that premise. I know not that it entirely delivered, but...
Well, why don't you let me take you through a summary of the film?
Yes, for those of our listeners who have not recently seen Reign of Fire, let them know what happens in the film.
All right, so Reign of Fire, it builds itself as this big dragon showdown. Dragons are there, but that's only a little bit of the film, I think. Most of this is a movie that's like a post-apocalyptic survival drama, and it's between the battle between Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey. Matthew McConaughey plays this gung-ho American dragon slayer called Van Zandt.
Van Zandt.
No, it's Zan, Z-A-N.
Oh, Van Zandt.
Yeah,
me.
Which is super weird. Yeah, and then they have to battle dragons because dragons have caused the end of the earth, basically.
No, there's some plot elements I feel like you have elided. So, yes, it's set in the apocalyptic future of 2020,
exactly.
Which you will have noticed is right now. So that won't be worth looking forward to. But it's set in England. Christian Bale is the leader of this ragtag cult of survivors who are living in some sort of ruined abbey under constant threat of dragons. Matthew McConaughey shows up with his like American commandos
in a tank.
We can come back to how on earth they got armored cavalry across the sea in the ruined post-apocalyptic world. But Matthew McConaughey has to convince Christian Bale to join him in his quest to kill the main dragon. Christian Bale's character, whose name I cannot recall,
Quinn.
Quinn, turns out, when he was a little kid, was there. His mom was this foreperson on the dig that unearthed the original dragon that gave rise to the terrible dragon plague that destroyed humanity. 20 years later, he's leading this ragtag band. The McConaughey character shows up. They have this theory, which they don't have a lot of evidence for it, so I don't know where it came from. This theory that all the dragons all over the world are lady dragons. There's only one dude dragon, and if you kill him, the dragons will stop breeding, and there will be no more. Which I think basically turns out to be correct, although they don't have a lot of evidence for it. Coincidentally, they have tracked this dude dragon, the main dragon, to England. They randomly happen to meet Quinn, who is the one human being on Earth who knows where the main dragon is. Because he saw him when he was 12.
That's what happens in movies. You just
and
have
no
to...
one remarks upon it. No one's like, holy shit, what are the odds that we would meet the one human being, and he's still alive, that knows where this dragon lives?
One thing I've noticed in our, I don't want to say years of doing this podcast, it feels
year,
like years.
Year of doing this
year,
podcast.
Is that you take things very literally.
But it's a plot hole. I am offended by plot holes that can be fixed with a few moments judicious screenwriting.
Yeah, well, it's what I like to call a cinematic coincidence. It pushes the story forward.
Fair enough.
But yeah, that is the main plot of it. My question for you, Brian,
yes.
Did you like the film?
I did not really like the film. I didn't dislike it. It's not terrible. It's a weird movie because it's kind of this campy B-movie. Like, it doesn't quite have the effects budget that a post-apocalyptic thriller about dragons would have. Yet, Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey, the two leads, fairly serious actors, fairly reputable actors, they deliver these very serious performances, Christian Bale more so than Matthew McConaughey, and the movie takes itself very seriously. So it almost feels like it didn't really know what it wanted to be.
Yeah, you could have gone with, like, the camp factor of, oh, this is a movie about us slaying dragons.
Yeah, we're fighting dragons with tanks.
No, but it turns into also this, like, weird interpersonal drama because there's a relationship that Christian Bale has with this little kid that he rescued. So there's, like, a little bit of a father-son dynamic there. There's a lot of, like, serious elements that are under the film that I don't want to...
They don't seem to belong in the film.
Yeah, they kind of detract from just, like, making a big summer blockbuster, right? And it's very dark and dreary. Like, life is miserable in England, right? It is very post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, it should either be, like, a serious, like, post-apocalyptic movie like The Road.
Yeah.
Or it should be a gonzo fighting dragons with tanks, and it should have Brendan Fraser in it. But yet, it is neither one nor the other of those things. Did you enjoy the film?
I love Rain of Fire.
Had you seen it prior to this?
I've seen it multiple times.
I didn't realize. You love it?
Here's the thing. I do love it because I think, first of all, I think that
you sure love a bad movie.
I have an indescribable love of terrible films. But yeah, I agree with everything you said. But I do love this movie just because I like post-apocalyptic anything, right? That to me is a genre that I can dig into because I think it's interesting and fun.
Yeah, I like post-apocalyptic. I like dragons. I don't know that I want them together, but I will allow it. And yet, eh.
Yeah, it definitely like hit for me in a lot of different levels, probably because I think Christian Bale actually gives a really good performance here. He's very serious.
He brings the grim.
Yes. And
I believe that he's doing these things.
And Matthew McConaughey's performance is, like, funny over the top. So those, to me, that don't really balance each other out. But yeah, it's like, it's an end of the world movie with dragons. How do you not like it?
The two of them are really in the two different movies, right? Matthew McConaughey is in the gonzo fighting dragons. Like, Matthew McConaughey, spoiler alert, dies by leaping off a tower to fight a dragon with an axe. And meanwhile, Christian Bale is thinking about, like, his relationship with his quasi-son. And, yeah, totally different performances and totally different movies that are somehow one movie.
I think you really did nail it. But, yeah, I love this movie just because I'm just like, screw it, man. It's dragons. Like,
but
bring
it. But I wish the movie had said, screw it, man. It's dragons. Bring it. And they don't really.
I guess that's true. I don't know. I still enjoy it. But I will say that this time, I haven't watched it in several years. And this time when I watched it, it felt a lot slower than previous times that I've seen it. Like, the pacing in this movie is totally off because the scenes where they are just this ragtag bunch of people trying to survive are like The Road, right? They're really grim and resources.
And there's a lot of that stuff.
Right. Yeah. And there's a lot of it. And then when you get, and so that means that the action sequences are crazy and fun, but they feel tonally totally out of place.
Yeah, you're right. There's a really good action sequence where you first learn what the McConaughey commandos can do because the English people are terrified of dragons. When they see them, they run. They teach all the children to run. They never even occurred to them they could fight back. So then, you know, McConaughey shows up. He's like, yes, we kill dragons. And there's a great scene where they've got people parachuting out of the sky and they got a helicopter and they kill the dragon. But they go right back after that to the very sad and the very grim survival.
It's so funny because Christian Bale is like such a freaking downer the entire time.
He's very sad about his lot in life.
He does not like it at all. I do have some interesting takes here that I'm going to save for probably towards the end of the podcast.
You're saving good takes?
I am, because it's about McConaughey and Americanism.
Got to listen all the way to the end, people. There's some good takes coming.
All right, let's talk about the casting of this film because I think it's key.
It's key?
It is.
What is key about it other than Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey?
I think that you need Christian Bale to play dour British guy, and you need Matthew McConaughey to play American Commando.
Yeah, like, but what if, like, Martin Freeman was, Rowan Atkinson was the Christian Bale character? Then you would have your gonzo Tanks vs. Dragons movie.
You think so?
Yeah, I think Christian Bale's performance is too good for this movie. It's too believable for this movie. And Matthew McConaughey is doing a completely different, like, you know, campy, right, sweaty intensity.
But Christian Bale, to me, is like the epitome of British, right? He's the epitome, yes, of this, like, weird British, like, stiff upper lip.
Stiff
kind
upper
of
lip
thing.
Beyond the apocalypse.
Exactly. And Matthew McConaughey is, this is a super interesting turn for him because he's playing, like, American action hero.
He's a cowboy.
He is a cowboy.
He's a gunslinging cowboy.
And one of the things we haven't actually mentioned in this podcast so far, and I can't believe we're all the way in episode 3, is that it uses his iconic drawl.
His Texas drawl?
Yes. He's got that. It's subdued here a little bit, but it is very evident, right? And you need it because he's an American and he has to talk like an American.
Yeah, the fact that he's the Americanness of the character is nonsensical plot-wise, but I was glad that he was, because when he rolled up, I was like, oh no, he's going to do a British accent and it's going to be a disaster. But it was not.
No, and you need the Americans to come in and save the day, right? Because the Brits obviously can't do it for themselves.
I feel like I would be insulted were I a British person.
I think you're meant to be.
By the premise of this movie.
I think you're meant to be, right? Like, the British are super weak and they're just waiting for the big bad American to come in.
Yeah,
and
they're just
fight
hiding
them
behind their castle walls, and the Americans have no fear of the dragons.
Yeah.
But how did the American? So there's no fuel, there's no boats, there's nothing left. The civilization is all but decimated. How did the American commandos get a whole squad of people, battalion of people, and their gear, and their freaking helicopter, and their tanks, all the way across the ocean to England?
I mean, I think the tanks were probably in England.
You think those were British tanks, and they just scored them when they got there?
I don't know.
And also, the lady who, so there's a...
There's a woman, I don't know who it is. I didn't bother to look it up.
She's a little forgettable, and she's not an American actress, and she doesn't do a great American accent, so that's a weird choice. But the only evidence that they provide to us is McConaughey saying that this woman, whose name we can't remember, has a theory about this sort of dragon mating thing. That's it. She just cooked this idea up. And also, there's dragons all over the world, but there's only one. What does this one male dragon do? He must be exhausted fertilizing eggs all over the world nonstop.
What's also hilarious to me is how long do they think dragons live? Because when they kill that one male dragon, there are still probably plenty of female dragons.
Yeah, they're like, whoo, problem solved. But we just saw literally 1,000 dragons in London.
Exactly. They've got their work cut out for them.
They really do.
Do you think this is a good role for McConaughey?
I think that he brings a McConaughey energy to it that is... he's the most enjoyable thing in the movie for me.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, well,
you like Christian Bale shuffling around being sad all the time?
I mean, shuffling around and being sad is kind of my MO, so yeah. Well, like you said, two different movies, right? These guys are acting in two different movies. And this is very much a weird Matthew McConaughey turn because he has kind of like a weird evil side, right? Like if the guys in the encampment, like Christian Bale's encampment, weren't going to volunteer to go with him, he was just going to take
him
by force.
Press gang him.
Right? So he's got a little bit of an anti-hero to him. It's not my favorite performance in the film at all because, like you said, it is very campy. And it's not very believable.
No, it's not. But the movie is not very believable. Like, Christian Bale's performance is arguably stronger, you know, in some objective way, but McConaughey's fits the movie better.
Do you think it has a McConaughey-ness, this film?
Like you said, it's a weird role for him because he's the second lead, which is not normally his MO. He's Mr. Leading Man. He's not a bad guy, but he's a bit of an antagonist, certainly at first. But I think he does this thing in a lot of his movies that is sometimes out of place. It's just like Google-eyed intensity. Like, the camera cuts to him and just like, he's bugging, you know? He did this in A Time to Kill every time someone tried to shoot him or kill some of his friends or burn his house. But in this movie, he goes to that a lot, and it's perfect! Because that guy is bug-eyed intensity personified.
It's true. He has a lot of bug-eyed craziness. Like, a lot of, like, intensity.
Yeah, and the character is he's like his military commander. He's learned how to fight dragons. And we don't actually see him do a lot of, like, towards the end it becomes this very, like, gratuitous action scene where, yeah, he's jumping on a dragon with an axe. But for the bulk of the time he's on screen, he's ordering his troops, right? And he's like, you know, Ramirez, go ride, and the other person's name, put the thing in the ground that'll make the... Like, he's giving orders, and he's in a tank, and his face is in shadow, and he's sweating, and he's intense, and yeah, I'm into that guy.
It is a very... American role. So this brings me to the thing that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, a British military commander wouldn't shout and hoot and holler like that.
Right. Like, it's a very iconic way to play an American, right? Like a strapping, I'm just going to go do it kind of thing. And it's interesting to me that they chose Matthew McConaughey to play this, like, typical American badass, right? Because he's supposed to be an American badass. Like, I'm just going to come in and fight while you guys are just hiding the whole time. And I'm not sure that that choice works, because to me, Matthew McConaughey is like Mr. Laidback, right? Like, he is Mr.
Yes, this is not a laidback role or a laidback character.
This is not a laidback role. And they chose him to play this, like, crazy, iconic American gunslinger.
Yeah, it is counter to the McConaughey vibe.
Yeah.
So who in 2002 would have been a more obvious casting choice to you?
I mean, I cannot remember last week. I have no idea who was popular in 2002, but McConaughey, like, doesn't even have that body type, right? Like, he had to bulk up for this role quite a bit.
Yeah, there's one scene where he takes his shirt off to, like, attack Christian Bale.
Yeah.
And the dude is ripped.
Exactly. Like, he had to really change his whole image to play this guy.
Unnecessarily so, right? Like, it didn't matter. Like, that's the only scene where he's doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, he could have just been a normal tough guy.
Yeah, no, you need the, he's got that shirtless vest on 90% of the time.
He's always shirtless. Like, he's a fit guy. He didn't have to be, like, totally buff.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for you on who I would have cast instead.
Brendan Fraser.
That's good.
Martin Freeman as the as Quinn. Then we've got a much more gonzo movie.
Yeah, and this time you have two very, like, good looking.
Yeah, another thing the movie doesn't really get into is, like, their rivalry that becomes a friendship kind of thing. Well, I guess it does spend a lot of time on that, but it doesn't really pay off ultimately. Nothing in this movie really pays off, right? Like, they've marshaled all the resources of all the actors and this big effects budget and all this stuff. But really, like, there's this long, 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 sort of overly long setup of what's this of the setting. And then there's a lot of, like, fast action. They gotta go kill the dragon, and they kill the dragon. That's it.
Oh, no, I disagree. I think that a lot of this stuff in the movie pays off. I think, to me, the most compelling part of this is how these people are living, right? Like, it's in England, and they've taken over this abandoned castle, and they set up this, like, de facto society because they're the only survivors. There might be other survivors other places in the world, but they've have to create their own little civilization, right? There's lots of fun, well, not fun, but there's lots of good interpersonal moments between Christian Bale, Gerard Butler, and
his best friend from childhood.
His best friend.
Also very handsome.
And Scottish.
And Scottish.
So, yeah, so they've got all these little moments. I think they pay off really well. To me, there's an emotional undercurrent that actually does work.
But again, that's like the first hour of the film is that. It's this society. And the thing that destroyed civilization at this point could have been zombies or plague or, you know, the Trump presidency. It could have been anything. But we know it's dragons. That's looming over it. So that whole first hour of the movie, I'm like, where are the dragons? Where are the dragons? Go fight the dragons.
Yes, I get it. Okay, that makes sense. It's like the Godzilla movie where you don't see Godzilla until, like, the very end of
the actual film.
Yeah,
dragons.
Well, you saw a dragon. You saw a dragon in, like, the first
dragon,
5 minutes.
What do you think about the dragons as creatures? Like, effects-wise, their role in the film?
I think that the dragons, effects-wise, were actually pretty good.
Yeah, they looked pretty good for the time.
Yeah, I thought they looked pretty good. I think the premise that they've been buried under the earth just waiting to be woken up is pretty
stupid.
Absurd.
And they eat ash? Why did they eat ash?
I don't know. It does not show a lot of, like, imagination in terms of dragons.
No, and that's another... Here's another dumb thing. So they go to... At some point, they decide they're going to really explain fire breathing, right? Mm-hmm. The movie has cooked up this elaborate biological mechanism by which dragons breathe fire. But then also dragons live forever under the earth and eat ash, right? Like, again, the movie doesn't know what it wants to be. Either really buy in, either lean into, like, let's actually explain how dragons could be functioning organisms, or just say, shit, it's dragons, let's kill them. But again, like, the movie's bouncing between those two poles.
Yeah, okay, I will give you that much. And again, this is the same thing I said about Wedding Planner. I understand.
Such a similar movie in so many ways.
I mean, I understand that people think it's a bad movie because it doesn't work on a lot of levels. I think it's great. It's a super fun movie.
It was watchable.
It's about killing dragons. And Matthew McConaughey, I think, does a really good job. Most Matthew McConaughey-ish moment?
So, all right, I got a McConaughey-ish moment for you here.
Okay.
And I do agree with you that, like, McConaughey's core persona is, all right, all right, all right, right? It's laid back, it's sunny optimism. clearly playing against that here. But he does bring his, as I said, his goggle-eyed intensity to it. And there's a scene when he first rolls up. He's got his, so these people are terrified. They're living in their castle.
Yep.
Here comes a tank column out of nowhere. Christian Bale, and they got their rifles. They're like, we don't know who you are. Get out of here. They're raiders. They're going to take their resources. A showdown's coming. Christian Bale goes out there because he's got all this personal bravery. We see that from the character Quinn. He decides he's going to go out and talk to the leader of the Americans, who's Matthew McConaughey. McConaughey comes up and gives him just a humdinger of a speech. he convinces, and this shouldn't make any sense, that he convinces this, like, this frightened, defensive leader of this sort of resistance band that they should let him and his band of tank commandos into their compound. And the way McConaughey delivers it, you kind of buy it. You see why Christian Bale said, all right, bring him on in.
I agree. I think that's a really good Matthew McConaughey moment. And
he holds up the dragon's tooth and he's like, damn, man, y'all, we know how to kill some old dragons. Y'all, come on here. We're going to put our tanks in here and going to be gone in the morning and kill all them dragons.
It doesn't sound like that. But you were saying last week that he doesn't actually do great with these speeches. Like in The Wedding Planner, he was terrible. In The Time to Kill, he actually did a great job. He does it again here.
The Wedding Planner was not his fault. Mr.
No.
McConaughey, if you're listening, we don't hold that one against you.
No, but he does a good job here because they're like, here, play crazy-eyed American Commando. And he's like, I'm into it.
And here's your big speech.
Okay, well, this is my Matthew McConaughey moment is after they've killed the first dragon, right? Like, he's already in the compound. He's bought the trust of the people. He's going to hold on to that trust by actually killing a dragon. And they're having this party in their underground castle, and he comes in.
That moment? All right.
No, wait.
Okay.
He comes in. And everyone's like, yay, cheering the leader. And he, you know, raises his fist, and he does, like, you guys need heroes or something like that. Yeah, he yells at them. And then everybody like applauds, and then he like does like an about face, and he's like, "But we shouldn't need heroes or something like that. Like we shouldn't have to have heroes."
I thought that was a script writing malpractice incident. Like, yeah, like he had a tough day.
Yeah.
He lost some of his guys, so he's emotional. But he comes in, these people are like, oh shit, man, you can do it. You can kill dragons. They're so excited. They're understandably excited. And he yells at them for being excited.
He just dumps all over them.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you guys suck, man. Why aren't you killing dragons? Oh, man, I lost some of my... How dare you have a party, man? And he goes away. It didn't make any sense to me at all.
My other moment would be when he just is like starts beating the shit out of Christian Bale. He's just like, you know what? I've had it with this loser. I'm done.
Yeah. But you know, again, like... The character's not entirely consistent, right? Like, the guy who would do that, it didn't seem like premeditated. It didn't seem like he was doing that in order to, like, achieve an end. But in all other parts of the movie, we see that he actually has a lot of, like, control and resolve. And even when he does crazy things, he has a reason for doing them.
Yeah, but that's the part of him that's the unpredictable part of him that can be kind of crazy is what makes him scary.
The wild testosterone-fueled alpha male.
Well, the fact that he's willing to punch people, yeah, is always a thing.
He does kind of... So the character is... he's this, like, crazy General Patton guy, right? Like, he's willing to destroy many things. He's willing to, like, shed lives, including his own, for this greater purpose. And often when you have a character like that in a movie, you've got a Thanos where, like, they're mad.
Mm-hmm.
But the McConaughey character is not – he's a little bit mad, but you can see that – you can agree with him ultimately. Like, I couldn't do what he's doing, but someone has to do it.
I think McConaughey sells that madness really well.
He does, yeah. He's a sort of a Colonel Kurtz character.
You know, when we talked about Keanu doing a lot of acting through his hair – I think that McConaughey does a lot of acting through his big goggly eyes.
His big goggly eyes, yeah.
I think we've hit on something here.
he's a little bit bald in the film, though.
He's very bald
in
this
really
film.
Yeah, he's really shorn and buff. It's a look.
It is a look and a departure. Where does this rank in the canon?
This seems like a very minor entry to me. This seems like a... So in the grand arc of McConaughey's career, he comes strong out of the gate. He does A Time to Kill, Amistad, Newton Boys, U-571. He's the new Robert Redford. And then, shortly after Reign of Fire, he will wander into the long valley of failed adventure comedies and rom-coms. And then later he will come back, and now he's everybody's favorite again. This doesn't seem to fit anywhere in any of those things.
I think this is the studio's attempt to make him a box office action star, right? Like, again, we talked about this with Keanu. Actor will have some success, and then they will try to squeeze every last drop out of him and see what works. Can we make him an action star? Can we make him a rom-com guy? Can we make him a serious drama kind of guy?
Yeah, this is his most, like, pure action star role.
Yeah, we're not talking about Chris Pine on the show, but, like, Chris Pine has the same thing. Like, they put Chris Pine in a bunch of really bad action movies before they decided he doesn't really work as an action star. And I think that's what happened with Matthew McConaughey.
Well, does this rank for you highly in the McConaughey canon?
I mean, to me it does because I like this movie.
It ranks highly in your personal McConaughey
canon. It does, but I will say that to me this is definitely more of a Christian Bale film than it is a Matthew McConaughey
film. Yeah, he's the second lead for sure.
Yeah, and we're obviously talking about it because the role is like this crazy weird departure for him. But this is
we're talking about it because I wanted to watch the McConaughey Dragon movie.
But no, this is a Christian Bale film.
Yeah, and but the third of the movie that is McConaughey's is the better movie. Or the more fun movie.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I'm drawn to Life in Burned Out Northumberland.
Yeah. Give me that again. Give me that or give me the Gonzo movie. Don't give me them merged together. Like, the whole movie could have been, like, McConaughey as the protagonist and Quinn is the guy who's, like, seeing the world, like, watching him. Like,
yeah.
we're seeing McConaughey's exploits through Quinn's eyes.
Yeah.
Which we kind of are, but not really. We go back to Quinn's point of view far too much.
So let me ask you, who is the movie MVP here? Can I go first?
Yes. Who do you think the movie MVP is?
Gerard Butler!
Why?
He's so good in this film!
He's very charming and Scottish, but he's got like, I don't know, like four scenes.
No, he's got more than four scenes, but his job is to make Christian Bale human, right? There's a couple of scenes in the film where Christian Bale comes off as kind of a super dick, but then Gerard Butler is there to kind of rein him in and be like, hey, you're being a dick. And if I wasn't your best friend, I would punch you, right? So Gerard Butler is, for lack of a better term for me, you know, kind of like the softening girlfriend here, right? It's to humanize him. But he's funny. He's charming. He lightens up those dreary scenes with Christian
Bale.
Yeah,
I feel like if you're a casting director, and I don't think Gerard Butler was much of a thing at this point. I feel like if you saw this, you're like, get me that Scottish guy. Let's put him in the next movie.
He was not a thing at all. And they were just like, yeah, we need some unknown to play his best friend. Not an unknown, but Gerard Butler had not done a lot. Like, I think he'd done a couple of small movies before he gets this, and this is like one of his big roles. And there's that scene at the beginning of the film where Gerard Butler and Christian Bale are reenacting Star Wars for all these little orphan kids. And it's really cute. Yeah.
I'm going to say there's a real dearth of choices here. I'm going to say the dragon. because for the most part, the dragons are presented as wild animals, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's one that it kind of attacks the dumb colonists early on, and Christian Bale has to save them. You know, we have a sort of a few, and then there's the one that they kill with the jets. The dragons are just these sort of like mindless mooks,
mm-hmm.
but the main dragon is genuinely sinister. Like, he seems like he has agency. He's scary. But what I didn't understand while we're talking about the dragon.
Okay.
So they go to London. They're like, we're going to go to London. We got to kill the main dragon. Christian Bale's like, I know exactly who that dragon is. You'll never make it. They go, and Christian Bale doesn't want them to go because he seems to have this, what would be a crazy fear, which is that if they go halfway across the country, the dragon-infested country, to mess with one dragon, that dragon will somehow come and take it out on this castle of people hiding. Which seems like a bananas fear, but that's exactly what happens.
Yeah, he remembers.
Who? The dragon?
Yeah,
he'd never been there before. Why did he come and attack the castle?
I don't know.
It's scary when he attacks the castle.
Yeah.
It's a gripping scene, but I don't know why he did it.
I don't understand dragon motivations.
Well, I don't either, but I feel like the people who made the movie should have tried to convince. Because, again, the dragons are all just mindless beast, except for this one.
You know what's interesting about you?
I'm focused too much on the dragons.
No. Are you done speaking?
I suppose I am.
I don't want to cut you off in the middle of a thought. Sorry. But what I was going to say is that you're very hung up on the rules of the world being accurate. Like, that's very much
not
your
accurate,
thing.
Consistent.
Consistent.
Like, make up whatever you want,
yeah.
But however it works, it should work that way.
It's the same thing with the lake house. And these things are a point that you just cannot get behind.
Yes, it's offensive to me.
Sometimes you just have to let it go. And
I'll
I think
let it go.
That's what Brian's got to do here.
What have we not covered that is integral to the movie Rain of Fire and Matthew McConaughey's performance therein?
Does this movie have to star Matthew McConaughey?
No. Again, it should have starred Brendan Fraser and Martin Freeman. But I did enjoy... I think the most enjoyable thing in the movie for me was McConaughey being goggle-eyed and intense.
I enjoyed his muscles. Good job on those muscles, Matthew McConaughey.
Too much with the muscles, though, I feel like.
Yeah, but he needed them for his character. Yes. So what are we talking about next week?
Next week, we're going to talk about the movie Sahara, the great would-be action comedy that failed to launch a franchise starring Matthew McConaughey.
I'm very excited for it. I think Brian will probably have the same quibbles about it as he does with Rain of Fire, but let's find out.
Let's find out. Why don't we?
Thank you guys, as always, for hanging out with us. As a reminder, please rate and review us on the podcast app of your choice. We live and die by these reviews.
You got to give us a review. You know it's worth it.
Also, tell us your favorite or least favorite Matthew McConaughey movie, plus whether or not Brian is right about Rain of Fire and his dragons. You can find him on Twitter at Brian_Minter, and I am on Twitter at HemJaveri. Give us a shout out. Let us know. Before we wrap up the show, Brian has some reader mail.
I do. Several of our loyal listeners, by which I mean people you and I just both happen to know, made a few comments on the internet about Matthew McConaughey films. Alert reader Mary Warnica, friend of the podcast, suggested we watch the movie Sing, which I have lobbied for. Bit of an outlier in that it is an animated film where Matthew McConaughey voices a koala bear, but I think that is a strong recommendation.
Mary's a ringer. I don't know if I trust her.
Well, she also has children, as do I. A couple other people suggested that we would be completely remiss in doing a McConaughey-themed podcast if we did not watch both Dazed and Confused and Contact. Two films I feel we have decided not to watch, as McConaughey is not really central to either of them.
See, that was our thought process. I pitched Dazed and Confused and Contact, personal favorite. Contact is a personal favorite.
It's a good movie. Love it. Not
I know.
A McConaughey movie, though.
It's not a McConaughey movie. Same thing with Dazed and Confused. His part's in it, but he's only in it for like a short bit.
His breakout role, we love him in it, but yeah, there's not a lot of McConaughey there.
Yeah, all right. Those are some pretty controversial opinions. Mary, I don't know what to tell you about Sing. If we don't do it on the podcast, you can blame me.
Have you seen it? Have you seen Sing?
No, man, I don't have kids. I haven't seen it.
McConaughey's charming as ever. This is his most charming role as an animated koala bear.
All right, well, next week we're talking about Sahara. Thanks for listening. Bye.